This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
This is Saturday Magazine.
You are on Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9 with Macca and Tass.
We've just had a great conversation
With Dick.
Dick Wynne, the member for Richmond. We are moving on, but we are going to now focus our conversation on the medically supervised injecting facility. And joining us in the studio now, we have Dr. Nico Clark. Good morning, Dr. Nico.
Good morning, Tass.
Dr. Nico. I don't know. I'm not sure why I'm calling you that. Everybody seems to call you Dr. Nico.
Well, that's my name.
So you're the medical director for the supervised injecting facility based in Richmond.
Yes.
And you see, you've been part of the whole development of setting that up?
Well, not really. No, I've been overseas for 10 years. I've been working with the World Health Organization, and while most of this, the push for this injecting facility came about, and I was in the process of moving back to Melbourne when the centre was developing and they were looking for a medical director, and I thought this is too important a project not to be a part of. So I've come relatively recently to
Fantastic.
The project. But it's been fairly hard work since I've joined it, I think.
I could
it's
imagine.
Fair to say.
Well, there's a lot to talk about, but what I'd like to start with is just walk us through, what's the experience? What happens when somebody turns up and wants to actually inject some illegal drugs? What's the process? Take us through the steps.
So they come to North Richmond Community Health, and there's a doorway that's for the medically supervised injecting room.
Which is separate to the front door of the facility?
It's a separate doorway, yes. It's a kind of, it's a slightly more discreet, if you like, specific entrance, and people come inside. And if it's their first time, they'll be invited to have a brief conversation about, what it is that they would like to inject, and if they meet the criteria for the centre, that our licence stipulates some criteria that you have to be of a certain age, that you can't have any legal impediments.
I presume that's 18 plus.
That's right, yeah, that you can't have any legal barriers to being in that part of Melbourne or using illicit drugs. And we ask people if they've driven to the facility, and we invite them to give us a name by which we can call them. It's an anonymous facility, but we like to have something we can call people and then call people by. If they look like they might be young, we ask them to show some ID, but otherwise they can give us any name they like. And then we invite them to share some of their medical information in a way that we can look after them better. That's up to them, and provide us with some information which will help us evaluate how effective the service is. But again, that's up to them. And then they will come into the facility. And once we've then they will be given the material with which to inject in a sterile way, and they'll be given the opportunity.
I'm presuming you don't mean the drugs themselves.
No, they have to bring drugs.
They've got to bring their own drugs
Just to be clear about that.
Yeah.
And they're not allowed to bring in more than a trafficable quantity.
And what does that mean?
So for heroin, which 95% of the drugs that are injected are in our facility are heroin. It's less than 3 grams. They bring in a small amount. Obviously, if somebody...
Three grams would be the equivalent of how much somebody would inject in one dose?
No, that would be more than you would need in one day. There'd be very few people who could tolerate that in one day. So, trafficable quantities are generally kind of the kind of amount that you would have with you if you're just for your personal use, if you're not intending to sell it to anybody
else. So personal use amount,
Tass,
really, like not a, something that you would use yourself, not something that you've got because at that point, at that facility that, is more than what you need, and you might be going to do something else with it.
Yep.
So,
okay.
Then people would be invited to wash their hands. They would be given a little cubicle with which they could sit and prepare themselves, and they would prepare to inject themselves. And normally that takes people about 5-10 minutes, unless they're having difficulty accessing a vein. If people are going to overdose, and some people do, almost every day we've had some people require our assistance. If they're going to overdose, they normally do it where they're sitting injecting, and generally speaking, we're able to manage that by giving some people some oxygen or helping them take a few deep breaths, or sometimes we have to breathe for them with a bag and mask. And about once a day we have to give people the antidote naloxone, which reverses the effects of the heroin.
So you've had to intervene virtually once a day since you've opened?
Usually several times a day, yeah.
So potentially there's been, 60-odd people whose lives have potentially been saved through this facility?
Well, it's very difficult to convert that to lives saved. So many of these episodes, if had they occurred on the street, might have just been resulted in some temporary hypoxia, or if somebody had noticed, they might have called an ambulance. But there have been a lot of deaths in Richmond, and some of the overdoses we've seen, had nobody intervened, would have been fatal. Yeah.
If I can ask, just
I'm not going to harp on this, but I mean,
well, it's about saving lives.
It is about saving lives, and I'm not going to harp on the figure either. But essentially, 60 lives could have been lost if this facility wasn't there and provided some form of medical intervention and support for them.
Well, it's probably less than that. I don't want to oversell it. I mean, if we look
at halve it. let's go with 30 tests.
Well, if we look at the number of deaths in Richmond from overdose are not that high. Mm. So because we have such a fantastic ambulance service, which arrives on average within less than 5 minutes. But, there are deaths in Richmond, every couple of weeks on average from opioid overdose, and we're hoping that we'll be able to reduce that number.
One of the things you said earlier, Nico, if I might ask, when you said, okay, so, they're given sterile equipment, you ask some questions, you then give them, the space, the cubicle to do it, to then find the vein. So they need to find a vein. And you give them a few minutes to find a vein. What happens if they don't?
Look, it can be really difficult. It's quite a challenging experience to see somebody struggling to inject themselves. I'm reminded, I think, when the first weekend we opened, there was a lady who was somewhat distressed because her hands were very swollen because she tried to inject in her hands and was failing. And she was looking for some medication to reduce that swelling or some ice or something. And we went to look for some ice, and I just held her hand for a period of time, and she calmed down because, it's quite distressing for her. And then she proceeded to, we proceeded to walk her through
the steps,
and she asked where I think there might be a vein, and we could point out where there is a vein. And I won't go into too much detail, but because of what she was trying to inject, that was a difficult process for her. And we were kind of going through that with her for about half an hour. And in the end, she just injected into the muscle in her leg, which, it's a safe thing to do, and, it doesn't quite produce as an intense an experience for her. It's an interesting experience to kind of observe people through that. I have to say, you don't feel any desire to be in that person's situation whatsoever, but you feel a sympathy for people going through that experience.
So what happens after somebody has their injection? What's your role? What's the role of the facility? What happens to the individual after that injection takes place?
So, like I was saying, typically they'll remain where they've been for about 10, 15 minutes. They might feel... In the cubicle. They might be a little bit sleepy for a few minutes. If they're not too sedated, they'll typically pack up their stuff. They put their needle in a safe disposal unit, and they dispose of it safely. And then they go into what we call the aftercare. So it's a third room where people can make themselves a cup of tea or coffee or Milo even. And some people donate us food, which we distribute there. And then that's a kind of the setting where people can have a chat. So we've got two staff members there who are aware of some of the medical information they might have revealed on their form initially. For example, a third of the people said that they would like to talk to us about getting tested or treated for hepatitis. And we know hepatitis C is
it's curable now.
It's curable, but we can probably eradicate it if we're able to treat this population. And we've been able to treat the they're easier to treat people, but we haven't been as successful in reaching this population, who are the ones who are more spreading it. And, you know, if we're going to eradicate hepatitis C, we really need to capture this group. I mean, the Australian government has invested a lot of money, $1 billion approximately, in making these fantastic treatments available. And I think we've got an excellent opportunity.
So presumably you would make testing available for bloodborne viruses like hepatitis, HIV.
So we'll do it then and there in on the spot, basically. We have nurses who can do that. We've got some volunteers. We've had a retired anaesthetist who's volunteered to come and help us get blood from people with difficult veins. But then in the future we'll have a finger prick device so that we don't even need to take blood from people for whom taking blood is difficult. So we'll test them on it. They're on the spot, and then the next time we see them, we'll have the medication to treat their hepatitis.
So it sounds like what you're trying to do is to use the opportunity for people who wish to inject to also provide some additional support, but doing it in a sort of friendly way, a non sort of intrusive way that actually helps them to take a bit of charge of their own health, I suppose.
Absolutely. Our experience is that people want to look after their health, but they find that such is the chaotic nature of their day-to-day lifestyle, such is their focus on doing what they perceive they need to do to get through the day, they're not very good at making appointments and keeping those appointments, and without that, it's very difficult to navigate our healthcare system at the moment.
What do you say, Nico, to people that say this simply encourages drug use? You know, it's, you know, that possession of this drug is illegal. You know, obviously selling it is illegal, but possession of the drug is illegal, and that. You know, I mean, I've heard the argument, well, you know, they should all just be put in jail and all this sort of stuff. What do you say to people about why this facility is necessary, you know, to facilitate something that's illegal?
I mean, one of the impressive things when I started working for this project is to feel that there have been so many people behind its creation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've kind of never taken on a project where there's just, you feel like you're kind of being passed the baton from so many people's kind of really been working for so hard, and a lot of those people are people who've had children or family members die of heroin overdose, and you know, many you know, and for them, many of those people personally, their preconceptions about the way to manage opioid overdose are changed by that experience, and they realise that something like this needs to exist. We don't see people coming in kind of looking for a drug experience that they haven't had before. The kind of people who are coming in here have been injecting drugs for typically a long period of time. We don't see that kind of scenario, and neither do any of the injecting rooms around the world. It's not appealing like that. And, you know, we find that we have many people for one reason and another, and I think as part of this process, I think it'd be really interesting over time to kind of look at why people end up in this situation. And, you know, and often it's not really about the drug, it's about what's happened to people before they started using drugs. And when you see it in that context, you realise that this is a humane response to the situation that people find themselves in.
So I think in terms of, you know, gathering, you know, the experience and the information and the evidence will allow to work back a little bit from that position. I wasn't aware about the ability, you know, for people to be tested for other bloodborne virus or other, you know, other bloodborne.
Well, and treat it actually,
and treat it. I think that's.
And we've got a dental.
We don't talk about this. This is I think is a really crucial point about what the facility is doing, is that it actually has all. It will have all these other benefits. That yes, these people can be tested, and yes, some of them won't want to know the result, and they may not. You know, but you know, if it reduces those diseases, you know, by, you know, numbers, I mean, that's got to be a good thing.
Absolutely. I think, you know, there'll there will come a time when people will come to scrutinise how much we're spending on this facility and what's the value. I mean, it's hard to look
payback,
at people's lives in that term, but you know, nonetheless, we need to make these.
Well, you know, we do with HIV. We worked out that the education cost around HIV and AIDS was so much less than at the time the cost of every new infection.
Yes.
So, you know, if we had 1,000 infections, that's going to cost X hundreds of millions of dollars to health budget over time. Oh, let's spend $1 million now and actually let's reduce. And this is the same argument.
And the capacity to treat hepatitis C alone makes a very powerful economic argument for this kind of intervention.
So, Nico, I did ask this question of our previous guest,
Dick Wynne,
who's a politician. So, and he, of course, responded in a political sort of way. But I'll ask you as well, what's your response to the Victorian opposition's, the Liberal Party's position to shut this medically supervised injecting facility down? What's your response to that?
Look, I think that, it's not hard to imagine there are a lot of people in our community who are nervous about the concept of providing a space where people can inject drugs. For them, illicit drug use is so foreign to their day-to-day experience that it's something that they might be, they might find it a very challenging concept. And I think what we have with our facility is an opportunity for people to see that and to learn more about it. And we welcome any of the members of the opposition who would like to visit the centre and to understand how it works. And when you come to the centre, you might get a different idea than perhaps what you thought about it. I mean, you come to North Richmond Community Health Centre, you stand in the
it's a beautiful facility.
It is
actually.
We've got a nice little cafe. They're $3 coffees and they're very good. It's great. And you've got the maternal child health centre. You've got the general practice. You've got a dental practice. You've got allied health, and you've got a injecting room. And everybody goes to the services that they need, and we're able as a society to provide those services without interfering with anybody else's capacity to access the other services that they need. And you see immediately, and the service is usually busy, and that if we were to close that service, those people would just be out on the street injecting and causing the kind of problems that we're trying to solve.
So do you have, I don't know what term to use, regulars?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, so we
frequent flyers.
Yeah,
we have some people who were already known to our community health centre. So the community health centre has had a needle and syringe program running for many years, and the staff there have a fantastic relationship with those clients. They see them every day. They're kind of 300 regular people who come every day. And so we already have a significant relationship with many of the clients who are coming. There are some other people who come and go, and you know, we have new people coming all the time. The numbers are increasing.
Do you have any idea about the geographic location that these people are coming from?
I've had a preliminary look at the postcodes where people say they slept last night, and the main location is Richmond, but that's actually a minority of our clients. It's maybe about a third of the clients.
Okay.
The next is the CBD area, and then we've got the surrounding suburbs, we've got the northern train line area, and then a smattering from all over the place.
Okay.
But this is the nature of the kind of heroin market in Richmond. Basically, predominantly people come to Richmond to buy heroin because they've been
looking.
I wanted to just ask numbers. So, how many people would visit the centre every day?
We've been far busier than we
imagined. Expected.
We expected. We had 80 people come through on the very first day.
80 on the first day,
and it's just gone up from there.
Are you sure it wasn't members of the Liberal Party coming to have a look?
Well, if they were, they were injecting.
They didn't look like it to me. No. So, and the people, the response from people has been incredible. I mean, so many people think, wow, I mean, they've never felt like the society has taken the slightest interest in them. And here they have, they've built, and it's a nice facility. There's, you know, it's clean, it looks a little bit like a hospital. There's some natural light while maintaining discretion. It's a nice space. And the people who use the facility while at the same time perhaps feeling a little bit uncomfortable in a kind of a sterile environment where there are other people around, feel at the same time overwhelmingly supportive, sense of gratitude that it's there. And we've got a little book that we encourage people to write in. And every day we just get so much positive feedback from the people who are using it. We've seen immediate impact on the number of syringes in the area. There's far less syringes on the streets and in the car parks. There's far less overdoses in the car parks around the North Richmond Community Health Centre. We haven't had a chance to look at the ambulance call out data yet, but we are hoping that we'll see a reduction in those call outs. But anecdotally, people don't hear the sirens going as often.
And have you maintained 80 visits a day?
Many more than that.
Extraordinary.
The AMBOs are very pleased with how it's going. I've asked the question in the right area. They're very happy because, one, they're not attending anywhere near as many interventions, and it gives them the opportunity, to be doing other work. And I don't know if you knew, Nico, but Ken Lay, ex-Victorian Police Commissioner and Chair of Ambulance Victoria, some months before the centre opened, said on this show that he could find no evidence that supported the argument for it not to open. And Steve McGee from the Ambulance Employees Union also supported it. I think the evidence that you're gathering is going to be really valuable. I do, I just hope that the opposition take up the invitation to come down and have a look, because ultimately, if the choice is, do you want to save lives, do you want to improve the public health around some of these other diseases, then let's do it. And I would say one thing: if this facility had been open 12 years ago,
or 20 years ago,
12 years ago, my sister would still be alive.
Right.
So I know the need for it. No one deserves to die from a drug overdose alone and in awful circumstances. It's not right. It's not right. So thank you.
Thank you.
It's been great to have you on the show. It's been a really important topic. We've been backing this and following this right through from the very beginning, actually. But I just want to ask you one last question. Have you seen any LGBTI people using the service? Has that appeared as an issue at all? And do you have any comments on that?
So we invite people to let us know their gender identity and sexual preference when they register for the service. And I had a quick look at those figures, and we have maybe slightly higher than the average population, but not incredibly high. And while there are rates of drug use are higher in the LGBT population, it's less so in a heroin population than for other drugs. If you look at the
but I'm hearing you say that members of our community are using the facility.
Yeah, they're using the facility. Yeah, and we're certainly very happy for them to use facility. We try and make it as friendly for them as possible. We train the staff so that they're sensitive to the needs of that population.
That's great.
And we'll be looking at getting the rainbow tick.
Fantastic. Good on you. Accreditation, rainbow accreditation. And one final question. If any of our listeners are interested in any more information or even visiting the service, what are the contact details for that?
So you can, if you look on the North Richmond Community Health website, there will soon be if it's not there already, as an indication of how you can indicate that you'd like to visit the service. We'll be having tours of the service We close the service for a couple of hours once a week on a Tuesday so that we can accommodate like to tours during that time, and we'll offer some tours in the evening as well, where you can tour the facility when there's nobody in it, get a feel for how it works, and we can have a chat about it.
Dr. Nico Clark, thank you very much. It's Medical Director for the Medically Supervised Injecting Facility, Victoria's first, here in Richmond, attached to the North Richmond Community Health Service. Thank you for coming
in.
Thank you for your time this morning, and thank you for your great work.
Yeah.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.